Hello and welcome to Worlds Apart. For all the parallels between the hottest phases of the Cold War and the current tensions between East and West, there's at least one crucial difference. The neutrality of some European nations that was consciously created and maintained as a balancer between the two camps in the 20th century is no more. On the contrary, the neutral status of Ukraine, this basis of post-Cold War stability, is now in ruins. What does it mean for security in Europe? Well, to discuss that, I'm now joined by Austria's former Vice Chancellor, Heinz Christian Strache. Mr. Strache, it's great to talk to you. Thank you very much for your time.
Hello, it's my pleasure to be here. Greetings from Vienna.
Your willingness to engage with us is not only very valuable, but I have to say a little bit surprising, because many European politicians, even with non-consensus positions, don't dare to voice it openly these days, let alone on a Russian TV station. Why did you agree to talk to us, and aren't you concerned about the repercussions?
First, the truth is not always something definite. If you don't speak up, you become an accomplice. If you don't do anything, that is the only consequence. That's why it's important to speak up, to talk about the causes of what is happening. I'm saying this in full confidence because, you see, our ultimate judge is God Almighty. In the end, he'll hold us accountable for everything, and we need to keep this in mind and remember at all times that we can't keep silent. That's why I want my voice to be heard in the name of peace, my neutral voice.
I'm really grateful for that, and I'm particularly grateful for you mentioning this freedom of expression and freedom of thought, which had been European values, core European values, since the Enlightenment era. But at this point of time, it seems that any difference of opinions is not just discouraged, it's openly suppressed. Why do you think it is unity, or rather conformity, that is so valued by European politicians these days, rather than true diversity of views?
You're absolutely right. This is something to give thought to. On the one hand, we're dealing with a dictatorship of mainstream media here, the dominance of one opinion. Besides, what we actually see today is political interests coming before freedom of expression and democracy. All this clearly goes against core principles such as peace, democracy, and freedom of speech. The current situation in Europe is very saddening. Citizens with alternative views are now facing accusations of treason. They are increasingly stigmatized and marginalized. It's a shame.
And I know that you personally went through some of that because of your political views, but before we go there, let's talk about the most divisive and perhaps the most dangerous issue in Europe these days. I'm talking about the Russian military operation in Ukraine. And I heard you say recently that Europe is in the middle of this very harsh and very cruel war, of which the Russian incursion into Ukraine, which I have to say you condemn, this operation is one of the factors. What are some of the other factors? And more specifically, what role do you think the European Union is playing in that war?
We did see Russia start an aggressive war. However, this war has a history. There are certain reasons behind it. Don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to justify this war. You have to pay attention to the causes of this conflict. The EU is one of the losing parties in this conflict, which at present is limited to one region. Europe is forced to dance to the Biden administration's tune. The EU is losing at all levels, economic, social, and political. And on the global arena, the EU is playing an extremely insignificant marginal role today. If we want to remedy the situation, we need to understand the reasons behind all this. We are facing a serious regional conflict. However, no one is willing to launch a European peace initiative and shape it into something actionable. What we are witnessing today is the opposite trend. Parties of all kinds are emerging on the European political scene, including the left, and what they are actually doing is adding fuel to the fires of war. It's very dangerous.
Okay, Mr. Strache, in describing this war, you made a very interesting and I think acute observation. You said that politics as such is missing in the current development, and instead everything is being handled kinetically through supplies or of weapons or training of troops rather than talking or arguing. And I think that's something very important to understand, that politics is our best alternative to actual war fighting. Do you think there's still any way of bringing politics and negotiations back into this conflict?
You're right. The question is whether our political leaders are acting in a reasonable, sensible way. In fact, they will only regain their common sense when the people go to the streets and the pressure of the protests becomes unbearable. I know that a lot of Europeans are dissatisfied because the EU has not come up with any meaningful peace initiatives, ones to be reckoned with. Moreover, I believe that the pressure of public protests and of people's discontent with the EU could lead to the lifting of the sanctions that are harming lots of Europeans. The politicians can stop the suffering of the people in the long term. It's pretty clear to every European citizen who believes in peace that the ongoing conflicts can only be resolved at the negotiating table. Only talks can stop the human suffering and create a stable peace both in Ukraine and beyond.
Now, Mr. Strasser, you just expressed your concern about the lack of any peace proposals from Europe, but if we look at how Russia is portrayed in Western media, it is portrayed akin to the devil. And it's not even the figure of speech. This whole conflict is described in very ontological terms as a battle between the forces of good and the forces of evil, the forces of democracy and the forces of autocracy. When you look at it like that, isn't any compromise much, much worse and much more corruptive than even a defeat? Isn't it more, isn't it better to lose than to make a deal with the devil?
You know, all this reminds me of George Orwell's novel, 1984. In this book, there is a ministry of truth, which, ironically, is trying to conceal and distort the truth. People tend to ignore the events that happened long before today's war. I'm talking about the Euromaidan. As a result of the processes and events that took place back then, Russia felt isolated. The Maidan uprising actually toppled the democratically elected government of Ukraine. That coup killed over 10,000 Russian-speaking people living in the eastern parts of Ukraine. And then, all of a sudden, NATO continued to expand eastwards. These processes do make me think of the devil's deeds. Besides, we all remember Germany's ex-Chancellor Angela Merkel's recent statements when she commented on the Minsk agreements. She said that no one had ever taken the accord seriously right from the start. No one thought they could be the foundation for a stable peace. The only reason why they were signed was to buy the time needed to provide more military resources to Ukraine and make it stronger, to give time to Ukraine to brace itself for a conflict with Russia. All this definitely invites comparison with the plans of the devil. That's what they did. Instead of pursuing long-term peace and stability in Europe, and they did it knowingly, being fully aware of the potential consequences of such actions.
If I can use that metaphor of the deal with the devil a little bit more, you mentioned your belief in God, and I think this is something that you have in common with many people in the Russian leadership, because Vladimir Putin quoted on a number of occasions the New Testament, and blessed are the peacemakers because they will be called the sons of God. And I think he truly believes in that statement, and yet for some strategic and personal decision he made this decision to go to Ukraine with the military force. Now, and one of the reasons, I think, at least something that I hear in Moscow these days, is that the Russians have lost any hope in peacemaking, in conflict resolution. And you mentioned Angela Merkel, who said that, who even she has recognized that the West has used every effort to reach peace tactically, for military purposes. If that's indeed the case, if peacemaking is being used for war fighting, shouldn't we give this war a chance? Shouldn't we allow it to run its natural course? And in this case, where do you think it will end?
You see, ex-Chancellor Merkel's statements are both disappointing and worrying. We can see this is a proxy war run by NATO and the USA's Biden administration, first and foremost. They knew it and they meant it that way from the very start. So this proxy war is about the conflict of ideas, i.e. the idea of a multipolar world and the idea of a unipolar world. This conflict set in motion quite a number of processes that began earlier and that I already mentioned. And these processes have now reached their climax, and it's a dangerous one. Things can go too far, leading to a full-blown World War III. And that is why I believe it's extremely important for all the political leaders of the world, regardless of their parties or ideologies, to say no to warmongering and say yes to peace and to the international peace effort that will bring the conflicting parties to the negotiating table.
Okay, Mr. Strache, we have to take a very short break right now, but we will be back in just a few moments. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Worlds Apart with Austria's former Vice Chancellor Heinz Christian Strache. Mr. Strache, let me ask you specifically about your country, Austria, because as a neutral state, it played a very important role in navigating the East-West tensions of the 20th century, but it's no longer, unfortunately, viewed by the Russians as an impartial player. Neither is, by the way, Switzerland. Finland and Sweden, as you already mentioned, are soon to be members of NATO. What I want to ask you is whether you think that the concept of geopolitical neutrality in the 21st century is in any way different from what it meant in the 20th century.
You know, I believe that maintaining neutrality is always the right way. The neutrality principle is enshrined in the Constitution of the Republic of Austria. But those who are currently in power in Austria, i.e. our current government, decided to give up neutrality and abandon the right way. Regretfully, they did that. Some political parties in Austria are now even talking about the possibility of joining NATO in the future, which is what Sweden and Finland are doing now. I am most definitely against this, simply because over 80% of the Austrian people are also against it. We need to always remember this. And I think it's critical that Austria should continue to remain a neutral state, because a lot depends on that, and our citizens expect that.
Mm-hmm. Now, ultimately, this conflict has arisen from a disagreement over the neutrality of Ukraine. And I have to stress, it was specifically a disagreement over its military neutrality, not its sovereignty, not its democratic path, but military association, which camp Ukraine will be attached to. And it is pretty clear that, well, at least from the Russian position, that the West, for some reason, decided to abandon neutrality of Ukraine. Why do you think that happened? Why do you think it was tempted to break this post-Cold War order, which, whether we like it or not, was providing a basis for stability on our continent?
Yeah.
That's right. If Ukraine were to enshrine its neutral status in its constitution, then, for historical reasons, it would probably have to agree with the situation regarding the Black Sea Fleet and Crimea. If it had also supported the rights of the Russian-speaking citizens of Ukraine, if that had been done, it would never have come to this war. So it all started way before 2014. You must remember the European Union-Ukraine Association Agreement talks. Back in the day, I was the leader of a political party, and I insisted that those should have been three-way talks. I insisted that these talks had to involve not only the EU and Ukraine, but also Russia. We needed to invite Russia to the negotiating table in order to ensure stability around this situation and to discuss future development together. Obviously, the West had no interest in that, primarily the US administration. And there's also another thing. After the German reunification, even though NATO obviously did make promises of not expanding further east, no such guarantees were given in writing. And they probably already had some thoughts about Ukraine back then. And that's what caused all the tensions and the conflict that has now developed into a war.
I don't know if our Austrian audience knows that, but Ukraine's name, Ukraina, literally means on edge or on the boundary between two different camps, or Ukraya, по-русски in Russian. With the loss of political neutrality, it is now an open question where that boundary between East and West will lie. What do you think is the most realistic scenario at this point of time, with Russia having advanced deep into the Ukrainian territory and having accepted four of its former regions into its own territory? Where do you think this fighting could stop? What could be this new line dividing, new wall dividing the East and the West?
I'm afraid that the hostilities will continue and that we may expect an escalation, because I don't see any sincere demand for peace in Europe. There is no peace effort. Obviously, there will be more sanctions introduced to aggravate the situation, and I only see a desire to keep up this war in the interests of the US administration. That's why I'm quite pessimistic, because it only means more suffering for more people. The suffering will continue until the parties start negotiating. In absence of a negotiating process, there can only be a military solution. But I think that hurts the Ukrainians, as well as the Russian population and the Russian troops. And it also hurts Europe. I think that we must all be interested in putting an end to this war forever and finding a compromise in the name of long-lasting peace and stability.
Mr. Strache, you mentioned that this conflict comes at a huge cost to both the Russian and the Ukrainian populations, who are losing their lives and who are losing their livelihoods. But quite clearly, there is also some cost for European people and your own compatriots in Austria. What are you most concerned about as far as Austria is concerned?
First and foremost, both Austria and the entirety of Europe are having some serious economic problems because of this situation. There's been a record number of bankruptcies among businesses. Companies have become insolvent. The unemployment rate has risen. Many people have already lost their jobs. Besides, prices have been growing, and this affects a huge number of people. Many people can't afford the goods and services they used to be able to. So Europe is suffering too. Europe is involved in this process and is actually destroying itself. It's losing its competitive power because it's been losing a lot of production sites. There's also another grave danger. This regional conflict could set the whole world on fire. This risk is real, although many politicians in the West don't seem to realize it.
Now, both Russian and German languages have lots of idioms about the value of good, mutually respectful neighborly ties. And I think for the Soviet Union and later on for Russia, supplying its energy sources to Europe was a way of ensuring both income and economic and political stability. Do you think Western countries have fully understood and appreciated all aspects, economic and political aspects of that partnership?
I'm afraid that even though some did understand that, they didn't act in the interests of the European nations. Russia's oil and gas have been the foundation of our success and prosperity in the past decades. Russia has been supplying cheap gas, and that helped the European economy stay competitive. But then the situation changed. And under the current circumstances, the United States reaps the benefits. What's going on now is not in the interests of the European nations or the EU. And so it seems that this situation will keep getting worse.
I heard you forecast, and you said it in our interview as well, that protests and social tensions may intensify as a consequence of energy crisis and food crisis. But do you think people in Europe and the United States can still fully and freely practice politics as a way of influencing national policies? And I'm asking this question because of your own legal issues in the past and of legal troubles that Donald Trump and people of the right-of-center political persuasions had when they tried to go into politics and represent their electorate. Do you think politics is still a way to accomplish that change that you would like to see?
The people currently holding the top political positions are pushing businesses towards bankruptcy and people towards unemployment. This only makes people disappointed and angry. That's what makes them take to the streets and protest. So most certainly, there is a political dimension to this. It's important to understand that going against the current is very hard. Those people who are challenging the strong mainstream processes face persecution, and they get into trouble. Some get sidelined, pushed out of the political process, and their families pay the price. And these things are happening right now. Essentially, the population is taking the fall. It has come to the point where people get persecuted for their political views, and it's being done on purpose, and that's very concerning.
Okay, well, Mr. Strache, it's not the most optimistic note to end our interview on, but I still wish you all the success in your political endeavors.
You know, I'd like to say one more thing as we finish, if you don't mind. I'd really like for it to be included. I want to thank you, and I support what Henry Kissinger said. We are facing a very dangerous situation, and that's because those who are politically responsible can't properly see the consequences of their actions. They are ready to put up with the collateral damage quite willingly, and some are even ready to put up with the prospect of a nuclear war. They realize that a nuclear apocalypse is a possibility, and they consider it acceptable. In other words, these people quite willingly are putting all of humanity at risk, calling it simply collateral damage that can be overlooked as long as they get what they want. We need to break this vicious circle and start working our way towards each other.
Well, one of the ways to begin this movement towards each other is to engage in conversations that we just had. That's why I'm very grateful to you for your time and for your willingness to express your position here.
Thank you. All the best to you in Moscow.
And thank you for watching. Hope to see you again next year. And may peace and grace be with you and your loved ones. Bye-bye. We'll be right back.